There is a laminated poster on the wall of every emergency room I have ever been in. It has 10 faces on it, arranged in a row from left to right. The face on the far left is smiling. The face on the far right is crying. The faces in between are graduated. One quarter smile, one half neutral, three quarters distressed, fully open mouth at the end. The numbers run underneath, 1 through 10. The poster is asking you to locate your pain on a spectrum of human expression that someone printed out, laminated, and nailed to a cinder block wall so that patients could point at a drawing when words were not enough. I was 34 years old, the first time I understood that the poster was not connected to anything that happened next. I had been in pain for 6 hours before I drove myself to the emergency room. This is something I do. I drive myself because I have learned that arriving by ambulance triggers a different set of assumptions than arriving at the front desk in your own clothes. I parked in the structure across the street, walked in through the sliding doors, and checked in at the desk. The waiting room was about half full. I sat down with my purse in my lap and my coat folded over my arm, and I managed my face carefully. I have a specific set of muscles I use for waiting rooms. I do not let them see the pain in my expression because I have learned through a number of years of navigating this particular institution that a black woman in visible pain in an emergency room is read differently than a white woman in visible pain in an emergency room. The white woman is in distress and needs help. The black woman is agitated or dramatic or possibly looking for something she should not be looking for. I did not make this up. It is documented in the medical literature. There are published studies on the racial gap in pain assessment and treatment, and the gap is largest in emergency care, and I had read enough of them to know that my composure was not a luxury. It was strategy. After 50 minutes, a triage nurse called my name and took me to a small room with a blood pressure cuff and a chair and the laminated poster on the wall. She asked me to rate my pain on a scale of 1 to 10. I said 8. She wrote something on the tablet in her hand. She asked where the pain was. I told her. She asked if I had taken anything. I said ibuprofen 6 hours ago. Nothing since, because I did not want to complicate whatever they might give me at the hospital. She wrote this down too. She said a doctor would be with me shortly, and that I should go back to the waiting room and wait to be called. I went back to the waiting room. I sat down. I managed my face. The documentation that describes what I am talking about uses clinical language, racial bias in pain management, disparate treatment in emergency settings, underutilization of analgesic medication in minority patients. What those words describe is this. I sat in that waiting room for another 2 hours and 20 minutes after telling a triage nurse my pain was an 8. I was called before 3 people who had come in after me, which I noticed, and after 4 people who had come in before me, which I also noticed, and I sat and watched and kept the calculation running in the back of my mind, the way I always do in rooms like this. You do not want to know you are doing it. You do it anyway. The doctor who eventually saw me was a resident, young, with a manner that was technically pleasant in the way that technical pleasantness tends to be. He asked me to rate my pain again. I said 7. I had downgraded it by 1, without fully understanding why, in the way you sometimes soften a statement you have already made once and not been believed. He did a brief physical exam. He said my vitals were stable. He said that based on what he was seeing, he would recommend a course of anti-inflammatories and a follow-up with my primary care physician in the next week. He said if the pain escalated, I should come back. I said I was already here. I said the pain had escalated over 6 hours, which was why I had come. He said he understood and that the treatment plan he had described was appropriate for what he was seeing. He said it twice. He said appropriate. Here is the thing I cannot say in that room, the thing I have rehearsed saying and never said, the thing that sits in my chest through every one of these interactions like a stone I picked up somewhere and have been carrying without knowing how to put down. I am not dramatic. I work in project management. I run logistics. I am the person in my family who does not cry at funerals, not because I don't grieve, but because I was taught early that maintaining composure is a survival tool, and I have been maintaining it for so long, it has become something close to instinct. I drove myself to the hospital instead of calling an ambulance because I knew how it would read. I sat in the waiting room for 2 hours and 50 minutes managing my face because I knew what it would cost me if I didn't. I downgraded my pain by one number because somewhere between triage and the exam room, I absorbed the message that my 8 was not being received, and I tried, reflexively, to make myself more credible. I performed calm all the way through a medical encounter in which I needed someone to take my pain seriously, and the performance was so complete that the resident in front of me had no reason to believe the pain was as severe as it was. Not because I am a good actor, because I had been trained by years of similar encounters to make myself small enough to be helped. The discharge paperwork, which I read in the car before I started the engine, said that the patient tolerated the examination well and was discharged in stable condition. I had not told anyone in that building how I was tolerating the examination. I had told them my pain was an 8 and then a 7. The discharge paperwork described a patient who was fine. The paperwork and I were not describing the same visit. I went home, I took the anti-inflammatories. I called my primary care doctor the next morning and made the follow-up appointment. The pain I had on the night I drove to the emergency room lasted for another 9 days, and I managed it at home because going back felt like a cost I could not afford to pay again. Not a financial cost. The cost of going back to that room and sitting in that chair and rating my pain again and watching someone's hand move across a tablet and knowing that the number I said and the number being recorded were not necessarily the same thing. The laminated poster came back to me during those 9 days in a way I had not expected. I kept seeing the face on the scale that corresponds to an 8, the face that is almost at the end, the second to last face, clearly suffering in the drawing's vocabulary of suffering. That face had a number underneath it that was supposed to mean something. Somebody had decided that an 8 meant a specific level of intervention was warranted, a protocol existed, and in the gap between the protocol and the practice was where I had been sitting for 2 hours and 50 minutes in a plastic chair, managing my face. I have since read the studies in more detail. The finding that appears most consistently across the research is that Black patients in the United States are systematically undertreated for pain compared to white patients presenting with equivalent conditions. In emergency settings, Black patients wait longer to receive analgesic medication. They receive it at lower doses when they receive it at all. They are more likely to be discharged without adequate pain management. The reasons researchers identify are layered: implicit bias in clinical decision-making, a specific and false medical belief, documented in surveys of medical students and residents, that Black patients have higher pain tolerance or different neurological pain responses, which is biologically false and has been false for as long as it has been studied. This belief is not fringe. It appears in surveys of people who are actively training to become doctors. I am one person in a specific room on a specific night. I do not know what was in the resident's mind when he wrote appropriate in my file. I do not know if he looked at me and saw a drug-seeking patient, or an overdramatic patient, or a patient whose pain signal he had no reason to doubt, but whose profile did not trigger the same urgency that a different patient's profile might have. I cannot know. What I know is the record I left the building with, and the 9 days that followed, and the specific exhaustion of having performed my way through a medical crisis and come out of it with anti-inflammatories and a follow-up appointment. There is a word that gets used in the literature, undertreated. It is a quiet word. It sits in the passive voice and does not name anyone. It describes the outcome without locating the mechanism. I am undertreated. My pain was undertreated. The system produces a pattern of undertreatment for patients with my demographic profile. None of these sentences requires anyone to have intended anything. The pattern is the thing. The pattern is what you sit inside when you are in that room with the laminated poster on the wall. The poster has 10 faces. I have been face 8 more than once and come home with anti-inflammatories. I have looked at the crying face on the far right and thought, I would have to be that face. I would have to be visibly at a 10, openly demonstrating the kind of distress that the poster designates as its maximum, to receive the treatment that my described pain level should have already warranted. And even then, even at a 10, even crying, even without the composure I maintain as a survival tool, I am not sure it would be different. The studies suggest it would not. I still drive myself to the emergency room when I need to. I still manage my face. I still say the number and watch the hand move across the tablet and carry the calculation running in the background. I still read the discharge paperwork in the car before I start the engine. The poster is still on the wall.